gargantuan public sector pension fund is slapping its forehead about selling off tobacco stocks years ago. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. You may not like tobacco or the companies that sell cigarettes, but many investors do. Tobacco stocks have been flying high, this despite restrictions in many industrialized countries. Tobacco is still addictive, and emerging markets have been good to tobacco firms. Now, the massive public employee retirement system in California, it's called CalPERS, is reportedly talking about buying tobacco stocks again. Sabira Chowdhury writes about this in today's Wall Street Journal, and she joins us from, as it happens, London today. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, it would appear CalPERS out in California is having, what, second thoughts about selling off its big tobacco stocks?
That's right. So about 16 years ago now, CalPERS, which as you'll know is the U.S.'s largest pension fund, decided that it was going to pull back and actually sell all of its tobacco investments. At the time, they didn't make it a moral issue. They actually made it into a financial issue, saying they expected a wave of litigation, and so it was a smart move to step away from tobacco then. What ultimately happened, though, is that the litigation didn't end up having as much of an impact as CalPERS and lots of other pension funds that also pulled back had worried, and tobacco stocks have actually done very, very well since. So in something of an about-face, CalPERS very recently came out and said they're reconsidering whether that ban is actually a good one. And that's created a little bit of a dust-up within the fund, with the board somewhat divided on whether that's a good idea.
Well, it does seem to be a moment for what's called the socially responsible investment movement. But tell me about tobacco's success. Where are they selling all this tobacco? Emerging markets?
By and large, the tobacco industry has been able to push through price increases, and so their volume declines haven't been that steep. They've still been selling quite well, particularly in emerging markets. And all over the world, they've been able to push through price increases steadily kind of every single year, which is actually helping them do better and better at a time when many other industries are doing worse.
Before we give up on the notion of applying one's values to one's portfolio, given the experience of CalPERS, I wonder what would have happened to their portfolio had they divested from big oil companies a while back. They're still holding a lot in that portfolio out in CalPERS, and they could have saved themselves some misery.
Yeah, I think they have a fiduciary duty, which is why I think back in 2000, they said, okay, we're going to try to forecast what's going to happen in the future and make a responsible investment decision, with the word responsible meaning we don't want to lose our investors' money. I guess with the oil companies, you know, nobody saw it coming. Tobacco is obviously a really interesting topic because there is a moral argument. It is ultimately raising healthcare costs. But at the same time, if it's providing superior returns to anything else, I guess that there's a reason to consider looking back at it, no matter how unsavory the whole thing might seem.
Sabira Chowdhury is reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Her piece is in today's papers. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Philip Morris stock is up 16% over the last year. Stock in another big tobacco firm, Altria, is up 24% in the last year. Amazon stock was up about 10% in early trading. Its profits were much higher than expected. It sells a lot of remote computing capacity, and that's been a cash cow. Yet ExxonMobil just revealed its worst quarter since the 1990s with low oil prices, although profits beat expectations, and the stock was up almost 2% in early trading as well there. Let's switch to Christopher Lowe at FTN Financial, as we do many a Friday. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, David.
All right, beyond Amazon, we have this profit season, earnings reports, January to March. There's a consensus forming, I think, that it has been a lousy season. Are you buying that?
Well, yeah. I mean, when you add up all 500 of the S&P companies, they are very likely going to be down. It's second quarter in a row. You know, in that environment, when a company like Amazon posts good numbers, it really does stand out.
Do you think that's why stocks hit the skids yesterday and were weak again this morning, by and large?
Yesterday's sell-off was a combination of two things. The GDP report was not so great. Among the weakest parts of it was really lousy capital spending by companies, which underscores this profit squeeze. But then there was also specific news. Apple had lousy earnings, and when that stock drops, it pulls the index down.
So we'll watch these profits extending into a second quarter of general weakness, because that could mean jobs at some point.
Well, that's right. We just have an inkling of it right now. Companies so far have been cutting capital spending, But we have seen 3 months in a row where the number of temps working has gone down. Temps are the flexible workforce. They are usually the first ones to be let go at the end of an expansion.
Christopher Lowe at FTN Financial, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Nowadays, almost every day is a special day. Take your dog to work day, pie day, and today we thought it worth mentioning is Teach Children to Save Day, brought to you by the American Bankers Association. But interest rates are so low, it's hard to teach about the magic of compounding, right? Sally Herships has more.
With interest rates at rock bottom, some consumers are constantly on the hunt for an extra fraction of a percent, moving savings back and forth between banks.
Yeah, I have more than one.
Abby Lamb is talking about her piggy banks. She's in fourth grade, so her savings comes out of her allowance.
Do you think saving is important?
Yeah, because if you use all your money now, then you won't have anything to use in the future, and that might be when you're in your deepest need.
Gopi Shagoda is with the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research. She says one reason we might not save enough is we underestimate the value of compound interest. Another is something called present bias, also known as procrastinating.
So do you think Americans save enough money?
I don't really know.
The experts are divided on that one, but Abby will be prepared for the future as long as she remembers to do all her chores. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
A close buddy of mine went for a week to Israel last fall and brought one of those Wi-Fi devices connected to an American cell phone plan. The bill, when he got home, are you sitting down, was $13,000, 13000, not shekels, dollars. His wife was very understanding about it, and the phone company cut him a deal in the end. But be forewarned if you're going anywhere overseas with your phone. Mark Orlowski does a lot of traveling as executive director of the Sustainable Endowments Institute and joins us from time to time to talk about best practices in travel. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, David.
All right, let's talk about carrying your phone overseas. I'm about to do an international trip, and my first instinct is to call my phone company and ask for the special international rate. I suppose I could do that.
Yeah, you could. And that's definitely a better idea than forgetting to do that and just traveling abroad. Because if you head, say, over to Europe for a week and you use your phone like you normally would at home, you could come back and find out you've spent $1,000 or $2,000 or more in roaming fees. International roaming rates are just so expensive if you don't plan ahead.
No, indeed. So what do you do then?
You know, you could stick with your current carrier and add on a roaming plan for international travel. You're looking at upwards of $150 to $250 per gigabyte. You may want to think about other options, which would be getting a SIM card that you put in your phone from a local cell provider. That's going to be a lot more affordable. So one note of warning or caution for folks is that not all phones can take international SIM cards automatically. A phone needs to be unlocked. Check on that before you depart on your trip. Don't presume that that local SIM card will work for you.
All right. So one thing to do is many phones let you reset the data counter in the phone so you can tell how much data your actual phone used from the moment you went on the trip. And then you got to watch how some of your apps like Facebook can use data unbeknownst to you unless you turn them off.
Absolutely. If you're traveling abroad and you don't have a local SIM card that gives you plenty of data, you definitely want to be very careful in when and how you use your data. So you want to use airplane mode, for example, whenever you're not using your phone to make sure nothing's going on in the background. And most Android and iPhones allow you to turn off sort of background apps so they're not sucking up your data unbeknownst to you.
All right. Mark Orlowski's day job is founder and executive director of the Sustainable Endowments Institute, but he's a guy who endeavors not to get ripped off on credit card and frequent flyer points. And his approach to international phoning is at marketplace.org if you want more information. Mark, thank you.
You're welcome, David.
He also references a new system through Google called Project Fi, F-I, flat rate around the world, but you need to switch to their special phones with special plans. New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.